Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Tuesday afternoon, 12 minutes after 12 o'clock. Tuesday, beautiful day out today. John Najarian is on a phone line. He is watching Wall Street and, just like all of us, probably watching Capitol Hill as well. And Janet Yellen. Mr. Najarian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be with you as usual, Steve. Thank you.
Watch John on CNBC or follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. And I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably where we should start, right? Janet Yellen before the Senate Banking Committee today.
Yeah, and the senators, I thought, actually had some decent questions for Ms. Yellen. Sometimes it's all just grandstanding.
Right.
We all kind of get that, but this day I thought that they had a lot of timely questions about this vote, this referendum in Great Britain, how that could impact markets, and she, of course, indicated that while she's not going to tell the British people how they should vote, she said she believed it would be a little dicey if indeed they were to vote to leave, since it's a pretty big unknown how it would be handled. And she nonetheless said that she would extend whatever sort of olive branches were necessary from the Fed to make sure that they could soften the impact as much as possible.
Well, that Brexit vote is coming up on Thursday. And when she was talking about the difficulties, was she talking about difficulties for Great Britain for the U.S. or maybe for the world in general?
All of the above.
Okay.
Yep. She was speaking of it specifically for Great Britain, but then some of the Euro banks, the biggest in the world, the ones like obviously J.P. Morgan, in my mind anyway, is the true biggest, strongest bank in the world. But Deutsche Bank, the largest bank in Germany, one of the largest standalone economies in the world, and obviously the largest in the EU, had just been hammered over the past month, shares trading down from about 18 to a low of maybe 13 and change. Pretty big drop, but it's made a nice recovery. It's come back up from that 1390 level up to almost 1690 now. So there have been recoveries from a lot of the banks that they were worried about in the Eurozone, but of course, U.S. exporters would have to have some concern, although the effect would not be immediate. Nonetheless, sometimes trading doesn't pay attention to what's going to be. It just, if people are hitting that sell button, they just get out. And that's been a lot of what we've seen getting in and out along with this vote over the last 2 weeks.
Well, I know the polls are tight. They show that the staying in vote is leading a little bit. I heard something fascinating today. They said that the polling in Great Britain is often not very good, and that if you really want to see what's going on, you're better to follow the bookies and to follow the betting than you are the actual polling. And the way the line is going right now with the bookies is that they're more likely to stay than not.
Yes, the bookies are indeed, and on one hand, Stephen, I agree with that logic almost 100%. The reason that I say almost is that there are two really huge markets that are measured in the trillions of dollars, not the hundreds of thousands or millions that are wagered in these betting parlors, and that would be the British pound itself. The pound to the dollar had traded all the way down to 141 last week, just ahead of that tragedy with Ms. Clark, Joe Clark, the official who was
The member of parliament,
shot.
Sure.
Yep. And it has rocketed up since then. And the British pound was expected to weaken if Britain left, and it certainly was last week, but it has gained a lot of strength, traded almost back up to 148. So I'd say that and gold, because I think both will be very reactive to this vote. And, of course, traders that are managing those trillions of dollars, as well as, of course, entire countries that need to hedge their exposure, because regardless, Britain will have its own currency after this vote on Thursday,
right,
whichever way it goes. And the hedging that needs to be done is, like I say, measured in the trillions of dollars, not in the billions. So I think those are more of a tell about the indication of direction for Brexit, and right now they're firmly in the Remain camp.
I'll be there in a couple weeks. I can't wait to see how things are shaking out. I get the feeling, though, and John, you tell me, you're the expert, but you know, there's this investment for Brexit and against Brexit, and what should the investors do? I almost feel like we're facing a Y2K situation where we're going to wake up on Friday. It's going to be a pretty easy win for the stay, and everyone's going to be saying, what was everyone worried about?
If indeed it shakes out that way, and I'm hoping it does, and I believe that it will, but we're going to be, you know, over here at CNBC and so forth, we're going to be here. I won't be here all night, but I'll certainly be getting texts most of the evening. And if it looks like, as our evening, of course, is their morning sure. over in Great Britain, our late evening, if it looks like it is indeed going that way, then I think the markets have a sigh of relief and a lot of the European banks go higher. But if they are shocked by a leave vote or a Brexit, then I think all bets are off. The market makes a big move to the downside, but I think that's an opportunity here in the U.S. because that will not be a long-term negative for the United States.
Yeah, we just have a few seconds. Do you have a recommendation for us today?
Hain Celestial, H-A-I-N. We were buying that one today. A lot of folks that drink tea in particular are familiar with this one because Hain Celestial does an awful lot of that. But they do all kinds of organic bakery products and so forth as well. We bought it at about $51 this morning, and it's already $52.60. It looks like institutions are really going after it.
Well, it shows that you're a genius once again, Don and Jerry.
Well, I don't know if it shows that, Steve, but every once in a while a blind squirrel finds an acorn.
Nice to talk to you again. Have a great week. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you, sir.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. And my name's Steve Bertrand. I'm glad you listened, and you can follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook, or just drop me an email as well, stevebertrand@wgnradio.com. All right, how much money is in your savings account, or maybe in the sock between your mattress or under the bed or wherever? What do you have saved? 66 million U.S. adults have $0 saved for an emergency. That's the headline out of a new survey from Bankrate.com. And we're going to turn now to Greg McBride, who is the chief financial analyst for Bankrate, joins us once again on the Business Lunch. Greg, nice to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So I don't know, is that should we be surprised by that number? 66 million people have nothing saved. Seems pretty high to me.
It is really high. And that's, you know, that's just the people that don't have any emergency savings. The fact is, very few Americans have enough. So everybody's got more work to do in that regard, particularly those that don't have anything, because if without emergency savings, they have no buffer from high interest rate debt when unplanned expenses arise.
66 million, that's a raw number, but if you put it percentage-wise, another figure, 47% of Americans say they could not endure an emergency expense of $400. So that's half of us couldn't weather something like that without taking out a loan or maybe selling something. That's a pretty dramatic number. How does it compare historically? Is that have we always been this way? Are we getting better? Are we getting worse? Or how does that fit in?
Well, the numbers in terms of those who don't have any emergency savings, unfortunately, that's not improving. Haven't seen any improvement. We have seen some improvement at the other end of the spectrum in terms of the Americans that actually have an adequate emergency savings cushion. It's up to 28%, and that's an improvement of over where it's been in recent years. So some progress on that front. Unfortunately, it's still just 28%. You know, a whole lot of other Americans that either don't have any savings or what they have isn't enough to carry them for 6 months if they didn't have a paycheck.
Right, so that's the emergency fund is 6 months' worth of expenses.
Yes, for most people, that's the ideal. And think of that as a destination, not a starting point. It's going to take a while to get there. If you are a sole breadwinner, if you're in business for yourself, then you're probably looking at more. You probably need 9 or maybe even 12 months' worth of expenses tucked away.
Greg,
that happens is by saving on a consistent basis.
Did I read, Greg, that men are more likely to have that 6 months than women?
Slightly. The fact is, I don't think either one can really kind of hang their head.
There's
on
nothing
it.
To write home about either way. Right?
Yeah, exactly. It's it's only edges it out slightly, but still you're looking at less than a third in either instance.
All right. So you were talking about the idea that it's kind of a lifestyle. It's something you need to start early and build. And maybe you can see that in the generational numbers, right? Because the Gen Xers fare worse, and the older you get, the more likely you are to have some sort of adequate nest egg set aside.
Yeah, in terms of that six-month cushion, it takes time to get there. And so what we see is an increasing likelihood of having it as you age. And so those that are 71 and older have the highest propensity to have that cushion. Baby boomers are behind, right behind them. And so, you've got to be saving on a consistent basis. We see encouraging signs from millennials that they're doing just that.
You know,
I use the term,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Greg, but I use the term nest egg, and that's really the wrong term, isn't it? This is short of a nest egg. This is something that's an emergency.
Yeah, this is your sleep at night money.
Right.
This is the money that's going to help you sleep at night knowing that if the car breaks down or you have an unplanned expense that you've got something to cover it.
But the numbers are better when it comes to these emergency, right? I read somewhere like this is the 25th month in a row where things are getting a little better.
Well, in terms of overall financial security, yes. People are feeling better, and you're right, 25 consecutive months where people say that their financial situation is better. And that's chalked up to a variety of things. People feeling more comfortable in their jobs, more comfortable with their debt, their net worth is higher. It's just that savings continues to be really the Achilles heel. It's the one area where people are not feeling better, and feeling as if they're not making progress quickly enough.
If you're feeling a little better, take that money you'd spend on a pizza and put it away, and that will help you make you feel loads better a little bit down the road. Greg McBride, the Chief Financial Analyst for Bankrate.com. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Well, 12:37, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Muchen is in the studio after boycotting last week. We talked her into returning this week.
I just had enough.
Well, you made your point, and we've changed the platform. We're no more superdelegates, and it's good to have you back in
Thank
the tent.
Thank you. I mean, you begged me to come back.
I did. Everyone, in fact, I did it on the air, so they heard it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's start. Well, since we're talking about superdelegates and all of that, let's start with Donald Trump. You know, he fired Corey Lewandowski. Paul Manafort now is running the campaign. There's talk that they might bring in a more substantial structure, but Donald Trump is, women love Donald Trump. He's great for women.
I'm so glad that you gave me that twinkly smile when you said that. You could have done a little better to try to convince me that.
A lot of people
think.
Say that. Whenever he says, yeah. A lot of people say, you know, that's great. A lot of people say that. A lot of people telling me. But, women, he'd be great for women.
Not,
much better than Hillary Clinton.
Okay. Let's just first start with the facts. Okay. So the Gallup poll came out, and two-thirds of women say they will not only not vote for him, they will never.
They could never vote for him.
Never.
Right.
That's the facts. But let's also just say, it would be a genius move if he hired a woman as his campaign manager.
Do you think it would?
I think it would be genius.
I think he almost does have a woman as his campaign manager now.
Who's that? Ivanka?
Ivanka, yeah.
I thought that myself, but then I thought when all of this stuff went down, why didn't she come forward? When he was being so deeply criticized in the last 2 weeks, she's his best spokesperson.
And she did from time to time.
Not really, though. She didn't come out the way you'd think somebody who really does have a lot of people who follow her and respect her and like her. But the fact is, people do say that your success, like if you're interviewing people, the number one predictor of future success is past behavior. That's just a fact.
Right.
So if we look at the way Trump has actually treated women and come out on issues concerning women, he said paid family leave would be bad for the U.S. economy. Let's just start there.
Well, in a way, we're rehashing this New York Times article from a few weeks ago then.
Because
there were some, and I was kidding earlier when I said women love him. But he did also elevate women at times when others weren't in construction.
It's not a rehash of that issue. It's that now we're in the general elections.
Right.
That came out during the primaries. This is a whole new ballgame where if you don't capture the female vote, you're not going to get elected.
Well, one of the things that has struck me about this is you've got Republican leaders like Paul Ryan and Bob Corker, the senator from Tennessee, saying, well, you know, he's got a few weeks. We need
to
find out in a few weeks. And what they're really speaking to there is not him changing who he is, but it's changing the way he talks.
Changing.
You know, they're not saying,
right.
They're not saying he's got four or five weeks to stop, you know,
right.
Being a misogynist or being
right.
Whatever it is that he is.
Yeah.
They're saying he's got to reformulate it so he doesn't sound like
and
it.
And you'd think if he were smart that he'd have somebody coaching him every day saying, don't say the P word as
right.
We go
which
back.
Which he hasn't
right?
in a long time.
The fact is he said it.
in a
I mean,
long
are you,
time.
Is this really where we're going with this
no,
conversation? You know, it's been
no.
a while since he calls women
yeah,
pigs.
I know.
It's been a good month. So I feel better about that. But this recent Gallup poll is not insignificant. Two-thirds of women saying they will never vote for him. That just came out this week.
And you can't win without winning a majority of women.
I don't think you can.
I mean, there are only so many white men left.
Exactly. Some white middle-class men left.
Right.
Angry men.
So I'm getting these emails from Suzanne, and she says, we're going to talk about the one thing that men should never wear in the summer. And, of course, instantly I look down. At what I'm wearing.
I was so hopeful.
That I was going to be wearing it.
It just would make for such a wonderful moment for me.
So in the email, she says, I will not even tell you what it is.
No, I figured you might Google it because you're that kind of guy.
No.
No?
No. Okay, so what's the one thing?
So this was a survey of 1,800 women that Reddit produced.
Okay.
And so this is, you know, this is a good number of women. And this was far and away the number one thing they said men should never wear in the summer by a wide margin. Let's just take a guess.
Black socks?
No, but you're in the ballpark.
Flip-flops?
Again, you're in the ballpark.
Boots.
No.
What?
And not that vest. Were you worried that it's the vest that you wear a lot that you like?
I wasn't worried at all.
You were worried.
I wasn't worried.
Because you look actually really nice. I think you put extra effort in today. No. It's socks with sandals.
Oh, really?
That combination.
It's so Nordic. I love that look.
Women find upsetting. I have to say, I don't want to see that.
No?
I don't want to be anywhere near that.
I don't like to share my toes, so I have a hard time with sandals.
You know, and there's just no good rationale behind that, right? Typically, men don't have nice socks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to wear sandals, wear sandals.
Right. 30 years
here,
and I've never said I don't like to share my toes. Until...
Okay, can I just ask, have you worn that combination?
Of socks and sandals?
Uh-huh.
No. I don't think people really do that, do they?
Oh, they do.
You think I might have done that.
I'm wondering if you
that
have.
That hurts a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's talk about women celebrities and professional business women, right? So Sarah Jessica Parker's out with a couple shoe lines, stuff like that.
Which is obvious to a lot of people that she'd do that since that was her character in Sex and the City for so long. But she admitted at one of these big conferences that they've been having recently, I call them lady summits, where they get a bunch of women together and they talk to them about professional stuff. And she admitted that her fashion companies, Bitten, her role at Halston as a creative director, and her shoe line, the first two were a failure. Her shoe line really not doing well.
Well, when I see a celebrity in front of a product, I don't assume they have anything to do with it.
Well, it depends how much they are associating themselves with the product. She's all over the place with all of these products. I think we like to think that just because they're famous, their stuff is going to do well.
Right.
I think we know that's not true.
Okay, so to get back to what I said, sort of. I mean, when I used to buy Jacqueline Smith makeup in the 70s.
Did you just pull that out? That's so good.
If it's Jennifer Lopez with a clothing line or
Kohl's, right?
Kanye has a clothing line, I'm assuming. I don't think of them as actually being all that involved. But I guess, are they?
I think some of them are. I think some of them really do come out and say, I'm behind this. I made every choice. I chose every fabric. Some women do that, and Sarah Jessica Parker certainly has. But let's just agree that running a business is running a business. Just because you're a celebrity
doesn't mean you can do it.
No.
Right.
No.
Okay, so what do we learn from people like Sarah Jessica Parker?
I think we can learn that if you're going to use your celebrity to launch some kind of a product platform, you better be doing it with the knowledge that most of them will fail. most will fail. And what does that do for your reputation? Right? How does that look when people love you on the screen and then see you as a business failure?
Right. Well, I guess that's the difference then, isn't it, of becoming like a front person or someone who's really putting their work
right.
into it. Because we talk about that over and over.
Right.
To be successful, you've got to be prepared to fail.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to follow and see if Beyonce's Ivy Park line does well.
What is that?
It's a workout clothing line. They're selling it at Nordstrom. I just wonder.
I really thought that might have been the name of one of her children.
It's Blue Ivy.
Oh, she does have an Ivy. Okay.
Yeah, she does.
Okay.
Good call. You're usually not so up to date on Beyonce.
I just knew Ground Cover was involved somewhere. Uh-huh. Suzanne Muchen, you can listen to her podcast at WGMplus.com. It's called The Big Payoff. And
you're a huge fan.
It's one of the podcasts I listen to more than any other. And so I can't wait for next week's episode. Thanks very much for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll see you next week. Yes, we will see you next week.
You will.
Because I'll be here.
No more boycott. The boycott's over.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad we won you back. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion and Kim and Laura Vaughn as well. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation is in Chicago today. It's not their first trip here. They've been around before. Steve Salem is the president of the foundation, and he joins us now on a phone line. I know it's a busy day, Steve. Thank you very much for taking some time to talk to us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. Really happy to be here.
All right, so tell me first about the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. Just exactly what do you guys do?
Well, we use athletics as a hook to get the attention of kids who, primarily middle school age kids, residing in some tough neighborhoods where they don't have the same opportunities that some of our own kids have, like South Side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
We use athletics as a hook to get their attention, gives us a chance to get our arms around them, and once we have them, we can start presenting them with some opportunities to make some changes in their lives that help teach them critical life skills and get them ready for their future.
I hear some kids behind you, right? Are you at the Tarkington School of Excellence still?
Exactly. We're out at the Tarkington School today. This is the fourth stop on what we call our Team 8 tour. We teamed up with United Healthcare and CBS Ecomedia. And today we're at the Tarkington School for Excellence, refurbishing a garden area for the kids. We're in the back of the school to help bring something positive to a community that could use a little extra help. We're right down the street from the field that we cut the ribbon on about a year ago with Under Armour in it. We're just trying to continue our presence here.
Freedom Field, right? So not too far from Marquette Park. And you guys built that a year ago?
We cut the ribbon on that about a year ago, I think, maybe a little bit less. It's a beautiful park. And these kids in this neighborhood are the kids that we built that park for.
All right, so how do the kids use the park? I mean, you guys are going to take a little walk down to it a little bit later today, but tell me how you find the neighborhood today and how you hope to find it in 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
Well, the park today is as beautiful as the day we cut the ribbon on it. It's a synthetic turf park, the synthetic grass. So the maintenance costs, the maintenance needs are very low because there's no water, there's no fertilizer, none of those needs. And that's why we invest in the synthetic grass, so that the community doesn't have to worry about those maintenance costs.
Right, right.
And we expect 5, 10 years from now it's going to look just as beautiful. What we find when we build these parks, and each of these parks costs, $1 million or more, so it's a big investment. But what we find is that you go into these communities, if you make an investment in them, they will protect the field. And that's what's happened here, and that's what's happened with that Freedom Field was our 50th park. And that's what we find across the country, that the residents will protect that field. It's theirs. And they treat it that way.
And I guess, Steve, my question is about the development or the, is there a way for you to measure or to gauge the positive impact you've made, not just at that park, but in the other cities and the other 50 fields around the country? Do you see that you're giving these kids, that these kids are benefiting from all of this, or how do you measure that?
Yeah, that's always a challenge for any youth organization like ours, because so many other factors in their lives, both positive and negative. factors in their life. So it's hard to measure the specific impact, but we're trying to do that. We're actually working with the University of Michigan now to determine how we could really measure some of the impacts that we're having. But we do see it anecdotally, and anecdotal data is just as important sometimes and just as valid as scientific data. When you see the kids in this neighborhood out on these fields with law enforcement, one of our programs is called Badges for Baseball, and we use law enforcement as coaches. They're really mentors to these kids, and the whole purpose of the program is just like I said earlier, use baseball as a hook. The police officers come in as the coaches. Initially, the kids are, to say the least, hesitant to go out there with the police. But over time, a negative relationship turns into a positive relationship. And the police officers, and this is what the police officers tell us also, it's not just what we see. Positive relationships develop in communities and in families where historically it's only been negative. The police only come in for a bad reason.
Right.
Now they're coming in for a positive reason, and instead of it being here comes the police, it's here comes coach.
Steve, president of the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. I know you got to make your walk over to Freedom Field, so thanks very much for joining us today, and continued success. Thanks for that.
Thanks so much.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. What?